Our next presenter is Anna Grace Keller, who will be speaking about responding to crisis without militarizing it. She is a community health worker working with Kitua Medics in Charlotte, North Carolina. She's worked with street medics since 2002 in social crises, including Hurricane Katrina's aftermath, where she was dispatched and debriefed street medics in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, and as well dispatched and trained street medics in St. Louis County after the killing of Mike Brown. She's done self-funded research on street medics and has advised research by undergraduate and graduate students on street medics, their practices, and their political commitments. Chris, welcome.
Okay, bear with me because I'm very nervous. First, I have nothing to disclose. I fund all of my own research. What I want to talk about today is an evaluation framework that is coming out of some evaluation I was doing together with Sandy responders. And what was interesting was that a lot of their concerns were not about efficacy, but were about the ethical or political nature of their work. So this veers in an interesting direction. What I'm going to talk about is what disaster relief does, the concept of militarism, which is a conceptual framework that they were interested in for evaluating their work, and how militarism came into action after Hurricane Sandy. I'm not going to be running through the results of my evaluation. I'm just going to be looking at this militarization concept as an evaluation tool. And it needs a lot more work to become a tool and not just a framework. I'd love help with that. But I'm wondering if it is a useful framework for evaluating programs. So first of all, when you have a sudden impact disaster that causes widespread destruction to infrastructure, people self-organize. People come together, they redistribute their resources, they work to take care of the most vulnerable, and I call that disaster socialism. It's something that really attracts to what he called street medics, people who come out of social justice movements and have gotten into doing more disaster work since Katrina. We love that world. We want to maintain that world. We want more resources to be redistributed. And so that's part of what attracts us to do disaster work. Another approach to disaster relief that we run into often could be called disaster militarism. Maybe it's like Naomi Klein's disaster capitalism. I don't know. That's a question I wasn't able to look closely at. But disaster militarism, instead of that massive mutual aid, often involves a consolidation or defensive territory. And the militarism concept in the sociology and anthropology conversations is not just about guns and bombs. Not every fighting party is particularly militarized, and also not all militarization looks like war, like cyber war or weaponizing money or human terrain systems. There's a lot of new approaches to war that aren't involving guns and bombs. And so part of the questions that the medics had was they said, in what ways are we going into a very militarized disaster situation, reproducing that militarism in the work that we do? But the problem is that a lot of the work on militarism is not very specific. It's just all over the place. So I tried to think about, together with them and together with a body of research in sociology and political philosophy, what militarism does. And we talked about how it claims territory. Militarism builds a perimeter around the territory that it's claimed and prepares to hold that territory by way of coercion. And it concentrates power and resources up a command chain. So territory doesn't necessarily refer to physical land. Territory could also be a funding stream. Territory could be a scope of work. One example that was given to me by one of the site coordinators of the group that I was evaluating was that the Red Cross saw food distribution as their territory. And so Occupy Sandy, which was a very active group, was distributing large numbers of very good meals. And at a voluntary, at a VOAD meeting, a voluntary organization meeting, the Red Cross said, you can stop distributing meals now. We're here. We're going to be distributing meals. The perimeter and the readiness to fight, a sense of crisis tends to guarantee profit. And after disasters, you see a million hustlers show up who want to use that opportunity for crisis to sell their thingy, you know. But also, you know, we've heard critiques of the Red Cross and lots of other organizations that do concentrate resources. The concentration of power sometimes involves the suspension of democratic civil authority or constitutional law. For example, disaster volunteers aren't employees and aren't covered by OSHA, and a lot of other disaster workers aren't covered by OSHA. Even if you don't have a formal declaration of emergency, you also have informal suspensions of law. So the lens that I was looking through was the lens of this group called People's Medical Relief. They arrived on scene five days after Sandy, I think was their first. Well, here, I can read from one of their own evaluations. People's Medical Relief had its start on November 5th, 1 week after Hurricane Sandy, when 4th Street medics responded to Coney Island with the goal of setting up a clinic and grassroots medical hub. At that time, the most pressing medical issue was the care of residents in high-rise buildings, homebound by the loss of power, isolated and abandoned by city services. We spent our first days on Coney canvassing blacked-out high-rises, providing medical care and evacuating residents in need of emergency care, while running an ad hoc walk-in clinic out of the pews of Coney Island Gospel Assembly Church. A chance encounter with other organizers in the Coney Island housing projects led to the formation of a more efficient and effective and complete canvassing effort. Non-medical organizers mobilized large numbers of non-medical volunteers and dispatched teams to building, taking care to avoid duplication. These volunteers knocked on every door in every building in Coney Island proper, a dense neighborhood with 60,000 residents and targeted buildings in Brighton Beach. Volunteers sought a resident's material needs, food, water, and supplies. When a medical need was identified, they called People's Medical Relief. From our clinic and coordination space, we triaged the calls and dispatched teams of medical providers, including EMTs, nurses, street medics, medical doctors, med students, etc., to provide care to homebound residents. The mass canvassing effort was in full force for about a week until all buildings had been canvassed for emergency needs and the power began to come back on. During that time, we made an estimated 200 medical house calls to residents with identified medical need while running the clinic in the church. After that week, their care changed, and they moved more into partnerships with organizations in the community, and also more into a walk-in clinic approach. This is one of their volunteer dispatch sites. So I looked at I was involved with the organization. I was their initial dispatcher, and I did quality control for them throughout the early part of the project. So I used participant observation. I collected almost all of their internal communications and did qualitative coding of that. I had some of them write reflections upon reading some of the key documents, and hopefully soon I'm going to be able to move into an interview phase of this project also. They were active from the 1st of November 2012 to the 4th of January 2013. So some of the themes in terms of practices that came out over the full 65 days of their action was that they coordinated volunteers. Just as disaster survivors tend to have an intense need to help, also people who are outside the disaster have an intense need to help. But a lot of people don't know where to go or what to do, so having a way to channel Russian translators, to channel doctors and medical students into a place where they could be immediately helpful was a really key role that they played. The systematic survey that I described of knocking on every door on every house, nonpartisan service, that they worked with any organization that was doing anything like what they wanted to do. They didn't protect a funding stream. And continual advocacy, which for them, as an organization that founded themselves in the aftermath of the storm with an intention of dissolving themselves as soon as they were able to dissolve, advocacy looked, their politics, as they described it to me, the thing that they really wanted me to communicate to you was that instead of advocacy being about increasing efficiency of services and the them working for an organization that held power and the disaster survivors being primarily recipients of the services, they saw disaster survivors as the ultimate holders of power who temporarily delegate that power to services that have an obligation to serve them. So it was a matter of holding those organizations accountable so that if they wanted to keep the power that they had. There was three exemplars that I think look at some of the militarization concepts that I was working with. The first one was a story that came out about what I'm calling the loudspeaker. There was a second storm that came in 2 weeks after Superstorm Sandy hit, a nor'easter. And at that time, the majority of the people that were still in Coney Island were elderly or disabled, were high up in high-rise buildings with elevators that were out, with power that was out. And many of them spoke Spanish or Russian, not English. And at that time, there was police cruisers that were sent out to go through the streets and on their loudspeakers in English tell everyone that they needed to evacuate for the coming storm. And of course, if that police officer, if that was his beat, he probably knew how ridiculous it was, what he was being asked to do. But he wasn't allowed to do what he knew he needed to do. He had to operate according to his command chain. He had to operate according to orders or authorization, which was something that the people in People's Medical Relief tried to reject. One story from a reflection that deals with that was the first on scene with our group said, during my work with Occupy Sandy, my partner and I were teamed up with two doctors to canvas Coney Island Housing Project buildings and start to get an idea of what residents needed. The doctors were not street medics and had never done street medic work before. They wound up ditching us to go hand out food with FEMA, explaining that they did not feel comfortable just walking into buildings with no credentials. Apparently, they'd done medical relief work in Haiti following the 2010 earthquake and had some sort of badge to display on their clothes that identified them as medical workers. She said that we hope to avoid separation from the people by not wearing any sort of credentials. Our goal was not to be the privileged hand of aid coming to Coney Island to save the day, but rather to work together with people affected by the storm to get them the relief they said that they needed. A second story was a story when FEMA workers in the field called a meeting with some of the People's Medical Relief people. These are some of the site coordinators in the Rockaways. And the FEMA field workers were only authorized to search buildings that were over three stories tall and had a lot of other restrictions and needed to be specifically asked by the mayor in order to do work that they knew needed to be done. So they came to our little ragtag band and said, can you either do all this work that we know needs to be done, but we're not authorized to do, or can you get the mayor to ask us? And so the result of that was a press conference with Physicians for a National Health Plan and National Nurses United and other organizations in New York to try to call the mayor to authorize FEMA to do the work they needed to do. And in the meantime, starting in on that work and checking in with them. And FEMA's trying to mobilize to work more closely with community organizations, but it's really a difficult process of figuring out how to identify. And groups like this that come in at the bottom and work up are a key part of that. And finally, this is about, I guess, about looking at territory and getting it and defending it, was that as People's Medical Relief became very visible for the work that they were doing, of course, money and stuff started getting thrown at them. And there was this great temptation early on to say, oh, we're going to set up a permanent clinic in the Rockaways, not just our free clinic out of a shipping container that came from Joplin, Missouri. We're going to set up a permanent clinic. We're going to be here forever. And so they had a conversation among each other, New Yorkers and people from outside of New York, and said, actually, that's not what we want to do. What we want is we want the services that were in these neighborhoods before the storm to reopen and reopen better, particularly publicly funded resources. So the result was, again, press conferences and advocacy towards reopening those services, a very vocal perspective that they were a temporary effort that was not going to last for the long term. And the resources that they got, many of them, they just created a channel and sent them into federally qualified health centers and Coney Island Hospital, which were still shuttered, so that they'd be able to get back open sooner. So some of the questions for their own self-evaluation, you know, that they're doing, that they're asking me to help them develop a tool for, is that does a given disaster relief effort consolidate or deconcentrate resources? Does it consolidate or distribute power to decide? Does it suspend or build democratic constitutional law? And some of the things that they said they'd be interested in looking at if we are able to get this beyond just a conceptual framework and into something that has validated instruments built into it is FEMA's whole community emergency management approach demilitarizing, and how they're very interested in how militarism plays out beyond military and police structures in disaster, but in nonprofits and the private sector. And are there any hallmarks of demilitarization that we could look at that could be used in evaluating our programs? I have a lot to say, but this is my first time presenting in public, so thank you for bearing with me.